We usually spend our time here dissecting these big, sort of abstract concepts, tech, history, psychology. But today, I want to zoom in on something much, much smaller. Something that is probably sitting in your kitchen cabinet right now.
It's definitely in the kitchen and the fridge and probably the medicine cabinet too.
Exactly. We are talking about synthetic food dyes. And look, I get the immediate reaction, oh, here we go, telling me I can't have my neon candy.
Right, the food police are here.
But we aren't just talking about junk food today. We're digging into a whole stack of research, specifically this massive report from California's Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, OEHA.
OEHA, right.
And it suggests these colors are doing a lot more than just making our food look pretty.
That's the entire key. For decades, the story has been that these dyes, red 40, yellow 5, blue 1, are just physiologically inert, harmless decoration.
But the new data says
Right.
that they're biologically active compounds. So, to set the stage, I want to pull a story from the research dossier. It's about a mother, Stephanie Lomuto. I think her experience is kind of the perfect patient zero for this whole conversation.
Right, this is from the Help You report.
So, Stephanie has a 7-year-old son, normal kid, but one day he comes home from school, and her description was that he was just off the wall.
And not in a good way.
No, not just energetic. We're talking emotional dysregulation, extreme hyperactivity. She said the family was in hell for 5 days.
Which is a terrifying switch to flip so suddenly.
Exactly. So Stephanie, she does the logical parent math. She assumes he traded his lunch for like a mountain of candy or down to soda.
She went hunting for the sugar.
But the sugar wasn't the culprit.
Yeah.
She eventually traced it back to a healthy lunch item he'd eaten, a strawberry yogurt.
Which was, crucially, dyed pink.
Right. And that's the twist. We all assume the danger is the sugar, but in this case, the trigger seemed to be the aesthetic, the dye itself. So that's our mission for this deep dive. We need to figure out, are these dyes actually rewiring our neurology? And if they are, why are they still in everything?
And everything is not an exaggeration. That's really the first thing to unpack. Just the ubiquity. Because that yogurt story highlights the biggest misconception
It
that
is.
you can avoid dyes just by skipping the candy aisle.
I tried this before we started recording. I thought, okay, if I cut out Skittles and Doritos, I'm pretty much safe. But the source list you sent me is, it's wild pickles. Why on earth are there dyes in pickles?
It's all about visual consistency. We expect pickles to be this very specific, vibrant green. Nature isn't that consistent, so manufacturers use yellow number 5 and blue number 1 to hit that pickle green target every single time.
So the green in the jar is actually blue and yellow mixed together.
Often, yeah. And it's in salad dressings to make them look creamier. It's in those healthy spinach wraps to make them look greener.
Implying there's more spinach than there really is.
Feels like false advertising, but there it is.
What shocked me even more, though, was the pharmacy.
That's a huge blind spot for most people. We found them in cough syrups, children's Tylenol, vitamins. But the most ironic one in the literature has to be Vyvanse.
The ADHD medication.
Correct. Vyvanse is a stimulant prescribed to manage hyperactivity. But depending on the dosage, the capsule is dyed. The 30 milligram is pink with red number 3. The 40 milligram is orange with yellow number 6.
Wait, hold on. So, just so I'm getting this loop straight. A parent takes their kid to the doctor because they can't focus. The doctor prescribes a pill to help them
Yeah.
focus. And that pill is coated in a chemical that, as we're about to discuss, is linked to reducing focus.
It's a perfect closed loop of irony. For a child who's specifically sensitive to these dyes, the medication could, in theory, be making the very symptoms it's meant to treat even worse.
That is unbelievably frustrating, but it brings us to the core scientific question. We have the big three, red 40, yellow 5, yellow 6, making up what, 90% of the market?
How about that? Yeah.
And consumption is up fivefold since 1955. But is it really the dye? Or is this just the classic sugar high myth all over again?
That is the multi-billion-dollar question. And to answer it, you have to look at the Southampton study. It was published in The Lancet back in 2007, and it's really the landmark piece of research here.
Walk us through what they did, because this wasn't just a survey, it was a proper controlled trial.
Right. So researchers in the UK took about 300 kids from the general population. They had a group of 3-year-olds and a group of 8-year-olds.
And these weren't kids already diagnosed with ADHD, right?
That's the crucial part. These were just regular kids, and the results were stark. The children who got the drink with the dyes showed a measurable increase in hyperactivity and attention problems.
So it wasn't just that a few sensitive kids had a meltdown.
No, it affected the whole group. The researchers described it as shifting the entire population distribution.
Okay, what does that mean?
Imagine a bell curve where most kids are sort of average in their behavior. The dyes shifted the entire curve toward hyperactivity.
That's a powerful image. So for a neurotypical kid, maybe that shift just means they're a little rowdier that day.
Right, a little harder to settle down for bed. But if a child is already on the edge of that curve, if they're already struggling with focus, that shift can push them over the clinical threshold.
It tips them into a diagnosis.
Precisely. The dyes don't necessarily create the disorder, but they can amplify the symptoms enough to make them a real problem.
And that study is what triggered that massive California review by OECHA in 2021.
It is. They looked at 27 different clinical trials in humans. And their conclusion was that, yes, synthetic food dyes are associated with adverse neurobehavioral outcomes in some children. It's not just anecdotal anymore.
Okay, so if the California government and The Lancet are seeing this, why does the FDA still say these are safe? I mean, we have acceptable daily intake levels. I assume those were based on modern testing.
You would assume that. But those FDA levels, the ADIs, are largely based on studies from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s.
Wait, really? We're relying on safety data from an era when doctors smoked in hospitals.
Pretty much. And the problem isn't just the age of the studies. It's what they were looking for. Those old toxicology reports were designed to see if the lab rats, you know, dropped dead or grew tumors.
They weren't checking if the rat was having trouble paying attention in class.
Exactly. They were looking for acute physical toxicity, not subtle neurobehavioral changes. So when the FDA says a dye is safe, they mean it probably won't give you cancer immediately.
They aren't certifying that it won't affect a child's ability to learn.
There's a huge gap between the regulatory definition of safety and what parents are actually worried about.
Let's close that gap with some biology, because one of the things I always hear is, how can a little bit of yellow coloring actually change how a brain works? What's the mechanism?
Well, the OEHR report points to a few. One of the most compelling is nutrient depletion, specifically zinc.
Zinc. I know it's a mineral, but what does it do for the brain?
It's critical for neurotransmitters to function properly, especially dopamine, which regulates focus. The research suggests that some dyes, like yellow 5 and 6, can chelate zinc.
Chelate means to bind to it, right?
Yeah, the dye molecule literally grabs onto the zinc in your body and sort of escorts it out. So you can end up with a functional zinc deficiency.
And the symptoms of zinc deficiency are?
They look almost identical to ADHD.
That is fascinating. So the dye is basically stealing the fuel the brain needs to regulate itself.
That's one pathway. Another is inflammation. For some kids, the body sees the dye as a foreign invader and releases histamines.
Like an allergic reaction.
Exactly. But instead of getting hives, the inflammation happens in the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So the symptom isn't a sneeze. It's irritability and brain fog.
An internal allergic reaction that just looks like bad behavior that reframes things completely. Now, I want to pivot to one specific dye because the research on this one was unnerving. Blue number one.
Brilliant blue.
A lovely name for something that does something pretty scary. What makes blue one different?
Well, most things we eat get filtered by the liver. But blue number one has a unique molecular structure that allows it to cross the blood-brain barrier.
That's the fortress wall that's supposed to protect our brain.
Right. And blue one seems to just walk right through. Once it's in the brain, animal studies have shown that high doses can inhibit neurite growth.
And neurites are the connections between brain cells.
They're the little projections, the wiring, that lets brain cells talk to each other. If you inhibit that growth, especially in a developing brain, you are potentially affecting cognitive development.
That's terrifying. But here's the kicker, and I think the University of Liverpool study touched on this. We don't just eat a spoonful of blue one by itself.
And ever.
We eat it in a processed slurry with MSG, with preservatives, with artificial sweeteners.
And that's the cocktail effect.
Mm-hmm.
The Liverpool researchers found that when you mix these things, say blue one with MSG, the neurotoxic effect wasn't just additive. It was synergistic.
Meaning 1 + 1 didn't equal 2?
It equaled something like 6 or 7.
Mm.
The damage to nerve cells was exponentially higher when the chemicals were combined.
Which is exactly what a bag of flavored chips is. It's a chemical soup.
It is. And we haven't even talked about where that soup lands first. The gut.
Right. The brain-gut connection.
Mm.
What are these dyes doing to our microbiome?
It's kind of a double whammy. First, dyes like Red 40 can cause dysbiosis. They throw off the balance of your gut bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
But the real danger is when they're paired with emulsifiers.
Emulsifiers. Those are the things that keep salad dressing from separating, like polysorbate 80.
Exactly. Yeah. Emulsifiers act like detergents. They basically strip away the protective mucus layer that lines your intestines.
So the emulsifier takes down the shield and the dye attacks the wall. It creates a leaky gut situation, and that allows toxins into the bloodstream, creating this chronic low-grade inflammation that we know sends signals straight to the brain.
Contributing to things like anxiety and mood disorder.
It's a systematic assault.
It really is. Okay, so we have the science, we have the mechanism, we have the Southampton study. Why is this stuff still on the shelf? And why is it different in Europe? I always hear, oh, in Europe, the Fanta is a different color. It's true. And it's a masterclass in how regulation can work without an outright ban. After that Southampton study, the European Union didn't outlaw the dyes. They just changed the labeling laws.
What do they require?
They ruled that if a product contains any of those Southampton 6 dyes, the package has to carry a warning label.
A warning label, what does it say?
It says, may have an adverse effect on activity and attention in children.
Wow, that's the kiss of death for a kid's cereal brand.
Exactly. No parent is going to buy a product that comes with a behavioral warning label. So, purely out of self-preservation, manufacturers reformulated. They switched to natural things like beetroot or turmeric.
But they didn't do that here in the US.
No, because the FDA didn't require the label. So you get this bizarre situation where the exact same company makes a strawberry sundae topping. In London, it's colored with beets. In New York, it's Red 40.
Because without that shame label, there's just no financial incentive to change. Synthetics are cheaper.
Cheaper and more stable. Exactly.
But the armor is cracking a little bit, right? I've seen headlines about California banning Red Number 3.
Yes. Red number 3, or erythrosine, is a special case. The FDA actually acknowledged way back in 1990 that it causes thyroid cancer in rats.
1990, that's over 30 years ago.
Yep. They banned it in cosmetics. So for 3 decades, you couldn't put Red 3 on your lips in lipstick, but you could eat it in a maraschino cherry.
That makes absolutely zero sense.
There's a bureaucratic loophole. But
Yes.
yes, California passed a law banning it in food starting in 2027, and now the FDA is playing catch-up and proposing a national ban.
So Red 3 is finally on its way out. But Red 40, the one in the Doritos and the sports drinks, that's still considered safe.
Safe is a strong word. It is legal. It's not part of that ban. And that's a huge point for listeners. Just because you hear red dye ban, don't assume all red foods are now natural. Red 40 is still the heavyweight champion.
Which brings us all back to the parents, to Stephanie. Because if the FDA isn't stepping in and the companies aren't changing, the burden falls entirely on the family.
And that burden is heavy. The sources really highlight a socioeconomic divide here. To avoid these dyes, you need 3 things: time, literacy, and money.
Time to read the label. Literacy to know what Yellow Five Lake even means.
And money to buy the alternative. The organic dye-free mac and cheese costs $3. The neon orange store brand costs $1.
So we're essentially taxing health.
We are.
Yeah.
Lower-income families are disproportionately exposed. And even if you have the resources, you don't control the world. You send your kid to school.
Where the cafeteria serves pink yogurt and the teacher hands out red lollipops.
Exactly. The HealthBeat report made a great point about this. If you have just 2 or 3 dye-sensitive kids in a classroom and they come back from lunch off the walls, that disrupts the learning environment for everyone.
So my kid's education is impacted by what your kid ate for lunch.
It's a community issue. It just ripples out.
So for the listener who's standing in the grocery aisle right now feeling a little overwhelmed, what's the shortcut?
The shortcut is visual. Nature has a very specific color palette. You know, it does earth tones, deep reds, deep greens. It rarely does neon.
The glow-in-the-dark rule.
Exactly. If a food looks like it's vibrating with color, that bright turquoise, that highlighter yellow, it's almost certainly synthetic. Just put it back.
And check the medicines. That was a huge takeaway for me. Don't assume the pharmacy is a dye-free zone.
Absolutely. Always check the inactive ingredients list on everything.
You know, as we wrap this up, I just keep thinking about the why. We're taking all these risks altering brain chemistry, stripping zinc, inflaming guts, and for what?
That is the question I want to leave everyone with. We aren't adding these chemicals for preservation, not for nutrition. We're adding them solely for aesthetics.
To make it look fun.
Yeah, it's a cosmetic risk. So you really have to ask yourself, is the visual appeal of a bright red cupcake worth the potential risk of altering a developing brain?
When you weigh it like that, the scale tips pretty
It
heavily.
really does.
This has been an eye-opener. I am definitely going to be looking at my yogurt a little differently tomorrow. Thanks for unpacking all this with us.
My pleasure. Read those labels.
That's it for this deep dive. Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next one.